Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned craft brewery and restaurant in downtown Columbus, featuring seasonal beers and gift sets for any occasion. Consider giving the gift of craft. More at wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Welcome to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City with Ann Fisher. Joining me today, my co-hosts, WOSU food and restaurant blogger Steve Stover. Welcome.
Good morning, Ann.
And WOSU food and restaurant blogger Rich Turopak Sr. Welcome.
Thank you, Ann.
You can see all of their work at WOSU.org/chefs, you know, so check that out.
I've got a new one up.
Lots of new stuff up, so check that out. And coming up later today, we're going to review the Central Ohio food stories of 2019. Lots of news, as usual. But first, the Trump administration has proposed 100% tariffs on a variety of European goods. It started in October with a 25% tariff on a limited spectrum of wines and other products from France, Germany, Spain, and Britain. On December 12th, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative proposed 100% tariffs on a wide spectrum of European goods in retaliation for EU subsidies to Airbus, among other things. The products include whiskeys, cheeses, and wines, which is why we're talking about them today. Patrick Allen is co-owner and co-founder of Patrick Allen Selections. That's a Columbus-based importer of wines from Artisan Estates in France. He's been in the business since the early 2000s. Welcome to the show, Patrick.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Ann.
So what does a tariff like this mean to a business like yours? Can you describe your business a little bit and tell us how it affects you?
Sure. So we import wines only exclusively from France, and we work with small producers. So essentially these tariffs, the current tariffs are a hardship to our business, but if the additional tariffs are enacted, it would essentially force us to shutter our doors. It would be untenable.
There have always been tariffs, though, right?
No, they're taxes. There are taxes on wine, but there have not always been tariffs on wine. So, for example, the current tariffs that are in effect right now, they went into effect in October, and with very little, they weren't announced long before they were enacted. So mm-hmm. We actually had wine on the water when the tariffs were announced, and the tariffs went into effect before the wine landed, so we actually had to pay tariffs on those wines, and we couldn't cancel our order or do anything. We just had to pay a few thousand dollars in tariffs. Our Michigan distributor had the same problem, and they had a lot of wines that were shipping in, high end wines that were shipping in for the holidays that were pre sold. They got whacked with a $30,000 tariff bill that they couldn't do anything about.
Wow!
And that's after they've cut all their deals downstream, so they have to eat
that.
Yeah,
the wine had already been ordered from the wineries and was on the water when the tariffs were announced, so they really couldn't do anything about it.
So no notice.
Yeah.
We had about 10 days notice, and no one knew it was going to happen. Yeah. So essentially, everybody's very worried about, there are three things happening. You've got the current tariffs that are in effect. You've got proposed tariffs of 25 to 100% on all European wines. And then you've got a third tariff that's proposed in retaliation for France's digital service tax, mm-hmm. which would be 100% tariff on all French sparkling wines. Mm. So if all of these went into effect, you could be looking at up to a 200% tariff on French sparkling wine.
Oh, they're on top of each other. They're not.
Yeah, they could be on top of each other. Exactly.
So, how many? Do you consider yourself a small business?
Oh, we're a very small business.
Okay, how many operations like yours are out there? Is that a typical scenario?
We're not typical for Ohio. We're one of the few importers based in Ohio, but wholesalers also import wines. So, for example, our distributor Cutting Edge Selections here in Ohio, they have about 50 employees, but about 50% of their revenue comes from imported wines from Europe.
Wow.
So essentially, if you put these tariffs on the wines, they wouldn't be able to bring them in because they'd be unsellable, and they would lose 50% of their income that goes to paying 50% of their employees. So they could have to lay off 50% of their employees, ostensibly, if these tariffs were enacted.
I read, I was reading, I think it was in Food and Wine, but Jenny Lefcourt, she's a co-owner of Jenny and Francois, a New York-based importer, and she said that it would affect a huge portion of the wine industry, obviously, from importers to distributors, wine shops to restaurants, European wineries, to American wineries who won't have nearly as many stores to sell to. Why is that? Explain that, why that would affect American wineries.
Well, a lot of, there are two ways it would affect American wineries. The first way is a lot of small stores depend on income from these small production wines that would no longer be imported to the U.S. For their income. So it's hard to maintain business if all of your products go up by 25 or 50% or even 100% in cost.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, American wineries, you know, in 2018, the EU was the largest export market for California wines. So if we levy tariffs, it would be understandable that the EU would levy tariffs in retaliation. Cutting off that entire market, all of Europe, for American wineries as well.
Kind of what happened to bourbon in China.
And you know, these tariffs also include things like scotch, and then the new round of tariffs could include things like cosmetic, handbags, and other things like that. So you're talking about a lot of small businesses that depend on these products for their income, and making them unsellable would essentially shutter a lot of small businesses.
What are you hearing from your contacts in France?
So the French really, I mean, they don't have anything they can do about this. One thing I'm noticing is there's very little coverage in the media about this. So most people I run into in the street here in Ohio or elsewhere are completely unaware of the existence of the tariffs. So I think there's a lot of, you know, there's so much craziness going on in the media right now with so many other things happening that these have kind of been overlooked.
it's a little overwhelming sometimes. I also read that, like, Chinese wine lovers might be the big winners, but is it that easy for a winery to shift business to another country?
No, I mean, distribution channels are complicated, and wine laws in the U.S. and China, et cetera, are complicated. So even if I wanted to stop importing French wines altogether and start importing wines from another area, I'd have to find producers that aren't already imported, and I would have to register those wines with our government, with the TTB, get label approvals, et cetera. It would take, you know, almost a year from starting to get something into the country to sell. And, you know, you can't be out of business that long. So the same thing faces French producers. But essentially, these tariffs hurt American businesses more than they do these small French wineries.
Yeah.
You know, French wineries can sell more domestically or within Europe and divert their sales there. But as an importer or wholesaler, you really can't switch what you're selling that quickly. It's not possible.
Well, what are you going to do, Patrick? This is Steve.
Hi, Steve. How's it going? We don't know what we're going to do. It's kind of everything is in limbo right now.
Yeah.
So what's happening right now is we've got a lot of projects on hold because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't want to be in a situation where we bring in wine and then unexpectedly have to pay 100% tariff on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's chilling your wine importing.
It's freezing it, essentially. Yeah.
It is freezing it. So we shipped a lot of wine in December, but as of now, we're stopping any further shipments from France until we know what's happening.
Is this only applying to French wines or is all EU wines?
So currently, the current tariffs affect French, Spanish, and German wines that are under 14% in alcohol.
Okay.
And
most are.
In containers less than 2 liters. So we're lucky we import
wines
from the south of France. So we have a number of wines that are above 14% alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a hardship for us, but we kind of work around it.
Mm-hmm.
But if they expand the tariffs to all European wines, regardless of alcohol content, then we're going to have to close our doors, I would think.
I know it's not your business, but as far as, are there restaurants, are there retail operations that specialize in French wines in the United States?
Sure. I mean, there are certain small retailers that specialize in Burgundy and other things that are known for that.
Yeah.
Now, as a retailer, you can switch very easily
right.
what you're selling. But if you've built your market on selling French wines, you've got to find a whole new customer base.
And places like the Refectory.
That's what I was thinking of, yeah.
Is a Wine Spectator Award winner. It's going to affect them as well.
Yeah.
And
the other thing is, say, if you've got a $13 Pinot Grigio that you've been buying, all of a sudden, after these tariffs are enacted, it becomes a $17, $18 bottle of Pinot Grigio. People are going to switch to other stuff.
Right.
So, and then even more devastating for us is beyond the price increase, a tariff has to be paid when the wine enters the country. So essentially you have to pay 25% of the cost of goods
up front
as soon as the wine lands before mm-hmm. you've sold anything to pay for those goods.
Right.
And those goods are now at a higher price, which makes them more difficult to sell.
What is the process, Patrick, at this point? What do you understand about what's next? I know comments are on this latest proposed tariff, the one that was proposed on December 12th, are being taken through January 13th.
Correct.
How does this work at this point?
So no one really knows. I mean, you can comment on things. The things I would suggest doing are contacting local officials and joining a petition to help save the wine business. I would suggest our distributor here in Ohio, Cutting Edge Selections, has a lot of information on their Facebook page with links, et cetera. So if you go to Cutting Edge Selections Facebook page, you can find all sorts of links where you can contact people and join the petition to stop these tariffs. Also,
the wine,
I'm sorry?
The Wine Spectator article by Marvin Schenken has a link to the Office of Trade, the U.S. Trade Representative, and it's apparently a place where you can comment on rules.
And we're looking
so also,
for a link, too.
To my, if you go to my website, patrickallenselections.com, and that's Patrick Allen Selections, plural, .com, there's a tab that says tariffs, and it has an explanation of the tariffs and links to all of those things, including Marvin Schenken's letters, but also links to where you can comment if you care.
Terrific.
Do you talk to your competitors? If I
sure.
can call, I don't even know if you can think of them as competitors. I don't know how the business works. But, you know, other people like you in this position, is everyone seeing it the same way you are?
Everybody's kind of freaked out. No one knows exactly what's going to happen. There's very little information. We have, even with the current tariffs that are in effect right now, we've received very little information about them. And how they work is still kind of up in the air. It's kind of up to the customs brokers to figure out how they're going to implement them.
And I told Patrick, I don't think it would hurt to – I've put Patrick in touch with a number of local members of Congress who might be willing to help too. Senators and congressmen.
Because of the employment impact.
Right. The impact on – these are small businesses mostly, right?
Yes.
It affects small businesses in a much greater proportion than it does larger concerns. Yeah.
Because you don't have the capital flexibility.
Exactly. So, if they enact 100% tariff on all European wines, we would have to pay the entire cost of our goods up front as soon as the wine landed in the States before we sold anything.
Sold a bottle. Yeah.
And that would be untenable.
Yeah. Well, Patrick Allen, good luck.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll follow up with you when something changes and see what's happening then. I appreciate your time today, though. Thank you so much.
No, thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Patrick.
Patrick Allen is co-owner, co-founder of Patrick Allen Selections. It's a Columbus-based wine importer. It specializes in artisan wineries from France. We'll continue with our All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. If you have a question or comment about news from 2019 in the food scene in Columbus, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned downtown Columbus restaurant, taproom, and brewery, showcasing seasonal menus and more than 20 Wolf's Ridge beers on draft. Learn more at wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, along with my co-hosts, WSU restaurant and food bloggers Rich Terapak Sr. and Steve Stover. We're talking about 2019 now. It's all over with, but we want to kind of review. It's once again another very newsy year in the food scene in Columbus, right, Steve Stover?
Yeah, banner year in many ways. I mean, I don't think we've had a year like this in my memory. 17 was a good year. 18 was a little bit less, but according to Columbus Underground, they did an exhaustive encyclopedic story on the new restaurants. There were approximately 100 new restaurants in Central Ohio, restaurants and bars in Central Ohio this year. And there were 36 closures, which is a downer. But I think it may turn out to be maybe the most important year of the decade for the number and quality of new restaurants.
You know, things like Sweet Carrot closed in a couple of locations. Yeah. They overexpanded or they expanded too fast.
Acre Harvest, several of those groups.
Yeah,
and unfortunately that happens.
But they didn't go out of business.
No.
They just regrouped.
Well, for instance, this has been going on for years, and we kind of try to warn people. We know some of these people pretty well. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure everything is running very smoothly. Don't overdevelop and expand too much. And, I mean, Hubert Seifert went through this problem 20 years ago with Umberto's.
Yeah, even more than 20 years ago.
Yeah, probably more than 20 years ago. You know, they get off to a fast start and think, well, what the heck, we'll put in two more.
It's happened to almost everybody. This is the new trend. It's not, this is not the era of the Hankies and the Rigsby's and the Lentib and the Rosendale's. Restaurant stayed forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's smaller, people opening multiple outlets of less expensive restaurants. And that's really the trend of the last 10 years since the economic downturn.
It was interesting when we talked to Cameron Mitchell earlier this year. It's named one of the top 10 restaurant groups in the country now. But he had those early years where things were tight.
Yeah,
overextended.
He had Harvey and Ed's go out.
Yeah. Yes, after year, just 16 months. Weren't you surprised by
Mary,
that?
Although we were there right at the closing. When they closed, doing a happy hour, another happy hour story.
Yeah.
Grueling research. and it was very quiet. But the good news is that it was named one of the top 10 restaurant groups in the country.
Yeah.
They have 36 stores, 15 concepts, and that puts him in the same league with Daniel Boulud in New York. And
that's after
a few years ago,
selling off 92.
That's right.
What's happening in Columbus with all these new openings, smaller, less expensive, more locations?
Often chef-driven.
It's happening, chef-driven, and it's local. It's happening all over the country.
Yes. In fact, in Paris, we used to always go to the 1 stars or 2 stars or 3 stars. But now, this last trip, we went to small, younger, hot, young, chef-driven places that are less expensive to open, but they're creating the buzz all over the place. Because it's so expensive to open a Grand Lux restaurant.
Exactly. Yeah. Another issue is the margins are so thin.
So small,
so thin in the restaurant business.
Yeah. A Grand Lux restaurant, I'm not going to name the name, but one restaurant we were not involved in, but we were following, it started off costing almost $1 million to open a fine dining restaurant in Columbus. This has been years ago. And they finally whittled it down to two-thirds of a million.
Yeah.
But still, you just can't, you have to sell a lot of foie gras to.
And even naive investors know that it's very dangerous to invest in it.
Right. And so because it's a risky business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so they're smaller and in order to make more money, they're going with multiple locations. And sometimes you make a mistake and you expand either too fast or to the wrong place. You know, some of the places that went out of business were in pretty high income or pretty high rental areas. Mm-hmm. But on a happier note, Columbus is in the national spotlight a lot this year.
Some of the New York press has been and the Forbes had Jenny in a couple times.
That was the most recent one. Is Jenny was featured in Forbes, and she's been in there twice.
That's Jenny Bauer.
Jenny Brittenbauer of Jenny's Ice Cream, right?
And the title of the article: Jenny Brittenbauer on Her Ice Cream Empire and Ohio's Hidden Charms. And it's a 9-page article. And it's not only about her development. I remember when she opened her first ice cream store in the North Market, and it failed.
It failed.
And then I interviewed her right before she was starting to open the second one. And then, of course, the rest is history.
And then she went, you know, she made it through those challenges of the Listeria problems.
Right, yeah. Right.
One of the best handled disasters.
We were just out at a family wedding in Palo Alto, and they have Jenny's on the shelf.
Sure. I see people. I was in Chicago a couple years ago, and they were lining up around the street.
Yeah.
You know, because it was so hot. I mean, people love Jenny's ice cream all over the country.
She deserves all the press.
So you had Jenny, and then you had Cameron Mitchell, and then we also in Food and Wine magazine named Fox in the Snow one of the best coffee houses in America.
Yeah.
And we also have...
They've opened two after the original on 4th.
Yeah, two more.
Yep.
Yeah. So...
German
Please
Village.
Folks, go out and eat there.
Oh, no, they're very, very, it's a young couple and they're very savvy. They've also sought advice from, there's a small network of people like Cameron Mitchell who are kind enough to give advice to these young couples. Two more articles is that the New York Times had a big article last year. Columbus was one of the 52 places to visit.
They do
the
this each year. They have one of their editorial staff goes out and visits 52 locations and recommends.
Send me in, coach.
And we were up there along with Abu Dhabi.
And then there were several articles that followed, and the focus of Columbus was about the food. So there you go. There was also some Forbes articles before that. So and Food and Wine. So Columbus is just as in as you know we're the new Austin or mm-hmm. other. Food capitals of the
country.
But like I said, it is happening across the country that mm-hmm. it's going local, and a lot of that's driven because of the local farm to table.
Absolutely.
Right. Local sourcing issues.
Local sourcing as much as possible.
And cost. Yeah.
And cost, right.
Because local sourcing is actually more cost effective than...
You're listening to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. We're talking about the news of 2019 when it comes to food in Columbus. My co-hosts, Steve Stover and Rich Terapek Sr., are both food and restaurant bloggers for WOSU. You can find all of their reviews at wosu.org/chefs. If you have a question or comment, you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Steve.
One more, just a couple quick things on some more trends that we saw besides the Columbus being discovered. Rooftop bars are huge. There are now more than 2 dozen in Franklin
that's
County.
That's
amazing.
Trend. I wonder if they
ever open up the one on the top of the Nationwide building. Remember that one?
I'm surprised that they haven't.
One Nation.
It wasn't exactly a bar.
What about, remember the one, well, I don't know if they ever did outdoor dining, though.
Christopher's. There were a lot of
top floor,
but not open.
Yeah. I don't think they could renovate it.
Vegetarian and vegan focus. We had three important new restaurants open this year: Commune, So Plated, and another place called Woodhouse that we haven't been to yet. I'm probably going to take our Romeo retired old men eating out group there soon.
Commune is strictly vegetarian.
Yes.
But So Plated is not.
Correct.
No, it's not. But it has. It's vegetarian or veg-centric.
Or
vegetable.
We're going
forward.
There tonight before the basketball game.
Yeah.
Fine dining continues to decline. The other thing I thought was really interesting is the delivery of every kind of food and beverage. Now leading to virtual restaurants where they have a kitchen somewhere and nobody, there's no place to eat, but then they deliver it. It's called a ghost kitchen, and they deliver it. And Croget, our French, local French grocery store, Kroger, is doing that now.
And pretty soon we're going to have drones flying all over the city.
Andrew in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Andrew.
Hello there, everybody. I'm in the Short North a lot, and I have a theory about restaurants, and I wonder if your panel could comment. Uh-huh. Harvey and Ed's just seemed so closed off that I could never look in and see people enjoying the food and having a good time.
Interesting.
So I never was drawn in to go in. And also, where the Hubbard is now, before there was a very fine dining, you know, white table.
Rosendale's.
Rich Rosendale's place.
Everything was lined up perfectly, which I think subconsciously tells people, no fun. And I just wondered what your thoughts were on those two.
It tells me expensive, but I think that's an interesting point. And I think it's changing, though. But
you used to be able to walk by Rigsby's, which is where Harvey and Ed's was, and see Bob Lazarus sitting at the front table or other luminaries eating there. And I think there is something to it, sort of draws you in because you see a lively atmosphere. Yeah, you see a bar.
It's somewhat akin to what Cameron talks about, that he doesn't do quiet restaurants. It's the same thing. He wants noise in the restaurants.
Action.
Wants visibility
lively.
And noise. Because most of the millennial market, at any rate, is turned off when they walk into
a super quiet,
discreet, beautiful little restaurant.
But,
no fun.
You know, Cameron's in Linworth is still a nice...
It's you can actually have a conversation.
It bustles, but you can have a conversation. But
Del Mar is not.
No.
And it's lively in the extreme. And Lincoln Social,
his rooftop, it certainly is not. But a lot of fun.
Apparently, they had a cool New Year's Eve.
Anybody else out there, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And speaking, once again, of Cameron Mitchell and his propensity to mentor people, a lot of that he said he was well-mentored when he was coming up in the business. But the Bud Deary Food Hall, which he's behind, is getting ready to
and
open.
That's a big national kind of
trend. And yet another trend are these food halls that I think, again, harken back to that, more locations, more informal, good fresh food, but
this
less
functionality.
And that allows for some mentoring in itself.
You have people that you're sharing the space with.
Last year, our lead story was Columbus as a food and restaurant incubator, and this is exactly what the Bud Deary does. They now have all nine people, and they include Cousins, the lobster place, and
they're opening soon.
What about the Cousins Maine Lobster?
It's a food truck.
Oh, that's the food truck. Yeah, gotcha. Okay, now I know what you're talking about. And Modern Southern Table.
Yep.
Yeah.
And fried chicken.
Yeah, never
mac and cheese.
Of that. Yeah.
Gumbo.
Alphabetical Comfort Kitchen.
Yeah, comfort food.
Okay.
Now there's Borgata Pizza, Dorista Hummus. Stoff's Coffee, the roasters, no surprise there. Poke Bop, which is a poke place. Bony Filipino Street Food, which is the people from Bonifacio, which we love.
Oh, yeah.
And then Tacos Rudo. So,
how about the parking on North 4th? That's where the Bud Deary is. Is there parking available at that location?
Parking there. There is parking, street parking.
I'm guessing
that Bud Deary will...
I think they will have parking behind it.
They're smart enough.
That's what's going to drive it, I think. North 4th is really active.
Oh, my gosh.
But you don't have people strolling up and down the
street. It's right across the street from 7th Son.
Yeah.
Yep.
Down the street from Fox.
And right
Fox
behind our favorite restaurant name, Hoof-Hearted.
the
brewery.
Yeah.
Just saying.
You got to be careful when you say that.
There's some other ones opening. Degrees, the Columbus State Community College full-service restaurant.
Let's go there
when
it opens.
Well,
the 21st. And I think that's going to be a great mentoring situation. I think they can actually, I hope they do some counseling out of that to new restaurateurs.
Kids are going to do it. It's not going to be operated by kids, but they're going to be doing a lot of the serving. Preston's, the burger joint from the folks at Ambrose and Eve, the Pearl, Dublin, Town Hall, which is at 100% non-GMO and organic restaurant that's going to open in the Short North. Ivan Kane's 40 Deuce, a bistro style, speakeasy in Easton, and Sono Wood-Fired Chicago-based restaurant at Easton. So that's the coming attraction.
Yeah, that's that new development within Easton, just to the north across the street from Sam's Club.
Kitchen Social is.
Yeah.
And we went there before the holidays.
There's a Kitchen Social at Polaris as well.
That's it. Okay. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It is Polaris. Yeah.
They're the former Bravo Brio folks.
And it was really good.
It's across from Costco.
Noisy.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're so excited.
I know.
And we just can't hide it.
Stacy in Worthington, are you there?
I am here.
Hi,
Thank you. We have noticed that some of our favorite high-end restaurants have slipped in quality as far as mostly as far as service and just the experience that we have.
Which ones?
You really want me to say?
Yeah, if it's your opinion.
Hyde Park. We've been really disappointed the last three times we've gone and probably won't go again. And we're looking for some place to celebrate our anniversary tonight, actually.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Hoping to spend $150 or less. And we were wondering about Lindy's or if there's anywhere. We've never been to Lindy's or if there's anywhere else you'd recommend.
No, Lindy's is very nice. It's
very comfortable.
And Sue Duty, God rest her soul, was great at training people, and they're passing on that mentoring. And they have good staff, some of whom have been there for 25 years. So I don't think you'll be disappointed in the service, certainly. And the food is maintained a good quality. And they have a very active bar scene, so it's kind of a
lively
place.
But go ahead. You were going to suggest
what else?
Veritas.
Veritas would be another one. And if it's an anniversary, perhaps you start off with a cocktail upstairs in the old bank.
You romantic rascal.
I know.
Yeah, it's
exactly.
Supposed to be good idea. I've still never been there, but it's
a gorgeous
fabulous
place. It's very
beautiful.
Absolutely.
You
should go for happy hour.
Yeah.
I know. Happy hour.
So that's downtown at the corner of Gay and
Refectory.
Gay and Hyde.
If you want to go thrifty, that I don't know if it's tonight, but they also have a $29.95 three-course dinner all on weeknights in the bar.
I bet they do because it's,
but not on Fridays, I bet.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think they, at least they did last year.
That's something to think about, Stacy. Refectory with that deal, it's a good one.
And if you want lively, Seesaw.
Are we overwhelming you?
I hope you wrote that down.
Yeah.
Well, have a happy anniversary.
Yeah.
How many years?
Thank you very much.
How many years?
36.
Great.
Wow, good for you. Yeah. Congratulations.
Good number.
Thank you. We're pretty happy together.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
I appreciate it, and we'll check those out.
Okay.
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know what you think. It is All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. We are like grazing at the table of news today. There is a lot of news from 2019. We're looking back over the year. Next month, we're going to be looking ahead a little bit more. But right now, we're looking a little bit behind what opened, what closed, that kind of a thing. And of course, we take any questions or comments about the food scene in Central Ohio. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Rich Turepak Sr., Steve Stover, our food and restaurant bloggers for WOSU. You can find all of their stuff going back about 100 years. WOSU.org/chefs. We'll all be back after this. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, along with my co-hosts and WOSU food bloggers, Rich Turepak Sr. and Steve Stover. If you have a question or comment, we're looking back at 2019, what opened, what closed, what changed over the decade as well, the second decade in the 21st century. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. All right, so you wanted to go over a few other newbies.
Yeah, I thought we'd start with the at the end of 18 and breezing into 19, we had four really important new restaurants: Ambrose and Eve, mm-hmm. which is in the brewery district on High Street, and Commune, both of which are in Columbus Monthly Top 10 in their first year of existence.
Which is kind of unusual.
And Commune, yeah. which is vegan, is exceptional, I think.
Yes.
And that's another big trend that came out of that New York Times piece yeah. was they've had their – they're having their day in the sun. It's not an alternative,
no.
quirky right. asterisk on the menu anymore. It's full-on great, Rich, fabulous
yeah. Rich
food.
And I took our Romeo, Retired Old Men Eating Out group, 16, 70-something
paleo
guys, carnivores, uh-huh. and they loved it. And almost all of them have been back. So yeah. just saying, the yeah. food's
yeah,
really
it's,
good.
It's
on Parsons.
Things have changed.
Alqueria
things
Farmhouse, yeah. that's another important new restaurant, and the Locks Bagel Shop, mm-hmm. the former chef from, Ann and I went there for
the best,
earlier.
What did we have?
Locks and bagels.
Yeah, they do, but I mean
homemade bagels.
I'm trying to think of what it was we had. Corned beef, the best corned beef sandwich yeah. I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Period.
Yep.
Well,
that's coming. That's
it?
Good to know because we lost.
I don't know if they always
Harvey
have
and Ed's, which
yeah,
had a pretty good corned beef
was,
sandwich.
It was incredible. So.
And then Cameron Mitchell had two notable restaurants this year too. Yeah. The Del Mar in the Short North, and right above it, Lincoln Social Rooftop Bar, which has some food.
It's almost like a perpetual happy hour in the yeah. sense that it has a lot of small plates.
Which is another big trend.
Yeah. And you know, and they're $5, $6, $7. And
everything's under 10 when we went there.
Yeah. And, you know, so if you're not overeating right now because of the holidays, it'd be a good place to sneak out to.
And then three
Get
other
there
top,
early. It's very busy.
Three other top new restaurants this year. Seesaw, the James Beard Award winning chef Jonathan Sawyer from Cleveland, opens a very fun wood-fired shareables again mm-hmm. in the Short North. The Old Spot, Rick Lopez's new gastro pub on First Avenue in Grandview.
Where the Harvest was originally. In.
Right?
Oh, okay.
And Old Bag. And So Plated, the vegetarian-centric place on Lane Avenue that we
in the,
all
in the shopping
yeah,
center.
Place, and
so
I'm looking forward to hitting
that
their
might
patio.
Be yeah. some of the
beautiful
top
patio
10 new restaurants of the year in, yeah. in our experience.
Yeah.
And
well, let's take a call and see what folks see are saying out there in Radio Land. Hi, Gary in Columbus, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to have your guest comment. There's a restaurant, bar at the corner of Gould and Main Street, and they every, I think Wednesday, Thursday, but usually always Thursday, they have a different food truck. And these are more upscale than what you think about before.
That's great and great.
I also have somebody in a workplace where they, I don't know, somebody's coordinating them because there's always a different one, and they're all independent, and they're much more upscale than you think about, you know, food truck. Yeah,
yeah, that's all changed.
Kind of
We've
place.
Done entire shows they're, on food trucks.
They're doing well. That's Grain and Grape on the east side at Main and Gould. It used to be the Holiday Wine Store, mm-hmm. and they have some very creative new
right.
owners, and they do have those food trucks, and it's a real scene during the summertime.
Seven Sun
outside.
Doesn't have food, but they always have a food truck
right.
there, and I've had some great meals. From
That's
pierogies
North
to, yeah, fourth right across from the Bud Dairy operation. You know, everything from pierogies to some great hamburgers,
yeah.
Just lots of yummy things.
Yeah.
And
we were going to do a food truck show this
I
year,
thought we,
maybe in August.
Oh, I've done them before, but
when
not
the
with
food
you guys.
Truck
yeah.
festival, yeah. yeah.
Yes. Gary, thanks a lot for that call, and keep enjoying those food trucks because that's where a lot of restaurants germinate, you know, in the food trucks. It's what's made restauranting so much more accessible over the last 20 years.
There are a half a dozen restaurants that opened in the last 2 years that were food trucks.
We started off.
Yeah.
Mickey's Late Night.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mikey's.
Okay. I am going to say goodbye to Gary, and I'm going to turn now to Barbara in Columbus. Barbara, you're on the air. Hi, Barbara. Maybe not. Okay.
There are a couple others that we wanted to mention, and these two tend to be East Siders, and I'd like to plug those. Hangover Easy, which is on campus as well on Neal Avenue, right on campus, has opened a place on Parsons Avenue at the corner of Oak and Parsons. A lot of fun. It's only a breakfast and brunch place. Get there early. There's a great meatloaf sandwich place right next to the Drexel Theater called Newfangled Kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
Meatloaf-centric.
And they have other things besides, but the meatloaf is terrific. So.
Let's see. Barbara in Columbus, are you there? Okay, let's try Jeremy in Clintonville. Hi, Jeremy in Clintonville, are you there?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Enjoying the show as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to add to your list of newly opened vegan or vegetarian restaurants, three really great locations, fully vegan restaurants. Village Taco has opened a second location, their first in Alexandria. I think they're closing down to open in the former Hell and Al's on Parsons. And Nile Vegan has opened on campus, a really great Ethiopian place.
Where's that located on campus?
It's on High
Street.
It's on
8th. Oh, no, it's on 8th, actually. It's over kind of down, buried into campus a little bit.
Okay.
Fully vegan Ethiopian place. I just went there and it was delicious.
I was thinking
of
Blue Nile.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right, Blue Nile. Sure. And then, let's see, there's a 4th and State, which is the people who brought us Eden Burger, have opened a new place on the corner of 4th and State called 4th and State. And you mentioned Woodhouse, so Columbus has really a thriving vegan restaurant.
We haven't been to Woodhouse, but it's getting rave reviews from what I've heard.
Yeah,
yeah, I can say I've been to all those places that I mentioned, and they're all fully vegan and really great. We still have, you know, all the other wonderful places like the Loving Hut. And Porsche's also opened a new location, a second location on the High Street. In the old hole.
I missed that.
And that success is driving the other restaurants to offer more vegan options on their menu.
Absolutely. Columbus is a really great vegan-friendly, veg-friendly community. We're very fortunate here. So thanks for taking my call.
Good one.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thanks for listening. Let's see. Barbara in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Really enjoying the program. A friend and I have been going out to mom-and-pop type ethnic restaurants in Columbus for a number of weeks now, and we've hit Thai, two Ethiopians, Filipino, Cuban, a couple of West African, and I'm probably forgetting some. So I'm interested in your guests' recommendations on mom-and-pop type ethnic restaurants.
Ina's Caribbean up on Cleveland Avenue would be another one.
Yeah, but, and these are great. You'll often find them in the strip centers because the rent, wisely they open those in places where the rent may be reasonable and they can get off the ground. It's terrific. And, you know, as you listed all of those, thinking back to the beginning of that decade, we wouldn't have had half of them. And it's terrific to have that much diversity.
The grumpy gourmet is to say 40 years ago, our ethnic restaurants were Prizzuti's, Geem Long, and Yong
White
Mei.
Castle.
But we have come far, far, far. And I think we're going to do a whole show this year on
ethnic
restaurants.
Yes. And I think we could do a whole show just on, immigrants from the continent of Africa and what they've brought to the food scene in Columbus.
Right.
It's phenomenal. I mean, just between, the big grocery store on Morse, we went
Saraga,
mm-hmm. right? And then all of the little places all the way down Morse Road,
and
which is just a vibrant, vibrant community now.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Bethia Wolf does a food tour of just kind of mom and pop small ethnic places.
That's a good idea
Columbus
for the listener.
Columbus Food Adventures, Barbara.
Not
check
to be confused
out.
With Columbus Beer Adventures.
Yeah. Columbus Food Adventures, Barbara. Check that out. They do tours, and they always have great ideas, too. Thanks a lot for that call. We do have a few minutes left, 614-292-8513, if you have a question or comment about the scene.
I got a couple more.
Columbus. Okay.
I'm interested as I said, we're feeling a little behind because with 100 new restaurants and bars opening, we just can't get to all of them
can't keep
on
up
our
with
lavish
everything.
WOSU money, but I
want to
send a yeah, it's exactly zero.
It's an active.
We get a raise.
These guys are doing it.
Interested in the Gamut, the beer hall, the brewery and beer garden in Old Town East.
My niece Megan has been there. Love the setting. I'm going to go try it. She wasn't crazy about the food that she got, but we'd like to check it out.
Give it some time. Yeah. And we have been to Fireproof, which is an experienced restaurateur who has a lot of experiences brought in. It's a small plates. It's just it's in the Short North, about third or fourth on the east side of High Street where the big Fireproof sign is. And they also have a very nice wine list. We've run into some
go drink all the French wine you can find.
Exactly.
On that. Yeah, I guess there's going to be a run on it. I imagine.
Now, Steve, one of the other things you pointed out in the materials was the New York Times article on trends of the decade.
Mm-hmm. Right. We've gone over most of them by now, haven't
we? The one that I thought was really humorous was the Instagram one.
Oh well, yeah.
That how many times, and we're guilty of it because we want to get pictures for the website.
See, and I start eating, and then I go, oh rats.
It's everybody taking pictures of their food and putting it on Facebook or something.
I eat too fast.
Instagram.
Instagram's the big one. But people weren't doing it on Facebook. They were doing it on Twitter. Like, you know, it kind of got to be weird because people were like, I don't care what you're eating. But the salient point was made, I thought, in that article.
From the New York Times, Pete Wells.
You know, at one point at the start of the decade, chefs were trying to keep smartphones and cameras out of the dining room. And by the end of the decade, this person wrote that they were recognizing the power of a high-resolution digital image and that they were some of the most ardent and agile users of the medium now.
Exactly.
So they understand the power of a beautiful plated food, you know, of a plate of food, a beautifully plated dish, and how fast it can fly in social media.
Well, one of the things I think Steve is talking about by having so many to review that we can't do it is we used to allow 3 or 4 weeks for a restaurant to get up and running, get the service down, all those kinds of things. Bill Glover of the Hilton said, "You're crazy, guys. You got to get out there right away. Otherwise, you're going to be old news."
Exactly. We did the same thing. We used to give three months.
Okay, but that's
it's not
interesting.
Fair, though, but
is that really the best way to check out a restaurant? I don't go in when they first arrive.
Well, oftentimes.
I want them to get their menu straightened out and.
Service is really important.
Yeah.
I ask. But I think that they want you to come now. I can't tell you how many Scammer Mitchell and other people say, you know, we want you to review it early on.
And if the experience is just so-so, don't write about it. Go back and try it again three or 4 weeks later. It might be a totally different thing.
Give them a break then.
Yeah, we don't even go to openings anymore because we want to.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, I mean, I never go to, you know, you guys are the guys.
Other food trends? National food trends from these articles, television shows about food. You know, of course, we got
the
baking shows.
Well, but now the competitions, the Great British Baking Show and other food competition shows are using real people.
Yeah, and they're humorous.
They are dorky.
I feel sorry for some of the contestants.
British Baking Show because people are kind to each other.
Yes.
And right to the bitter end, they're kind. I hated the snarkiness and the meanness. And they're all amateurs, too. Yeah. And I love that. Yeah. And they're good.
Yeah.
They're amazing.
Good. They're really good. And you know?
The judges are great, too, I think.
Yeah, the new judges, they're, you know, well,
I love
new
the
judge.
Woman who was the
yeah, Mary.
Anyway, a lot of that going on.
A couple more. Small plates, farm to table, we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Food halls, we've talked about. Fast casual becomes a new fast food.
Yeah, more.
With Chipotle, then Piatta and Brassica and all those, where you go in and you choose your. I think that's a huge trend.
Brassica is up the game, though, I think. With what they do.
Lamb bacon.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I mean. Wow.
Yeah. It's great. And those North Star folks have done really well in their expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Not only in their restaurants, but.
They didn't do it right away.
They've gone to Cleveland now.
Exactly. They took their time.
Harvest has gone to Cincinnati, and Condado is really expanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little easier because they're They're a little smaller.
Yeah, and I think we've noticed before, I like Condado a lot, and I've had great meals there. The portions are a lot bigger than I expect them to be every single time, and it's really loud.
Really loud.
So I like to be outside if I can when it comes to Condado, but other people like that, and they're catering to a different,
the,
you know.
The original one on Fifth and High, I think, was very noisy and very popular.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, go figure.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Breaking news. The world's largest White Castle is coming to Orlando, Florida.
And
a reason
why
to go
Orlando?
Back to Disney.
I don't know. But I'm going to put all this, all the list of all the new restaurants in a quick blog, and we'll send it in right away, and we'll get it up there.
Have you tried the vegetarian Whopper? Or the
I tried to call it. The Impossible Burger or whatever it
is. Yeah, the Impossible Burger.
I tried on a trip back from the Pittsburgh area. We stopped at a Whopper and asked for it, and they said, "What are you talking about?
Oh.
They're not everywhere."
Okay,
yet, but we'll get there.
But we are. Happy New Year, Ann.
Happy New Year, Steve Stover and Rich Turbeck Sr., our food and restaurant bloggers for WOSU. My hosts, co-hosts on All Sides Weekend, chefs in the city. You can find all of their work at WOSU.org/chefs. Thanks to the All Sides staff, our producers, Aaron Esmont and Matthew Rand, our All Sides interns, Atiyah Ture, Bobby Gerberic, get back here, and Max Garrison's been holding down the fort, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Have a very happy new year. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, or Decade,